AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.
This is AutoLine After Hours with Peter DiLorenzo, episode number 64 for Thursday, July 22nd, 2010. The Unusual Suspects.
Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to another exciting episode of AutoLine After Hours. Don't adjust your sets. John is not here. He's in San Francisco. And David Welch, we don't know where he is. But we do have Scott Burgess from the Detroit News.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. And he brought his double cheeseburger, so he's golden. And then Frank Marcus from Motor Trend.
Who turned up empty-handed. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. And Ben baked some cookies, too. In
case. Holy cats.
But it's another exciting week. You know, we've got some news to talk about. Let's talk about how about General Motors taking a position back in a financing arm? You know, they never should have left GMAC go. That was probably the worst mistake right before the bankruptcy, a couple years before. That was just shooting themselves in the head, and now they have decided to buy into this finance firm. What do you think of that?
It's a smart move. I mean, that's for before bankruptcy. That's what was floating them.
Yeah,
was the financing, and Ford continues to do well with theirs.
Yeah, Ford never gave up on theirs, and that was significant.
No, although today we were hearing about how they were having trouble, you know, extending their credit in there because of the, you know, the tightened credit, and especially on the low, you know, low credit score kind of end of that business, which, of course, is apparently what these guys that GM are buying are kind of specializing in too, right?
Yes, yes, marginal types. But, you know, people forget. I mean, there's been a lot of good news. There's been a lot of profits reported. But this business isn't out of the woods by any stretch, not by any stretch. And Ford has tremendous debt. They didn't have the benefit of the quick rinse bankruptcy thing. And so, you know, the only thing they have to stand on is the best management and some really good products. Now, they're going to unveil the Explorer on Monday. I've seen it. I mean, it's a pretty, I think it's a dramatic move. I think people have written off SUVs. What do you think about that, Scott?
They've written off the three letters SUV. They want everything SUV can bring you.
Without the name.
If you can present it without the letters SUV, then you're fine.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Jim Farley's got a little marketing job to do here because Explorer is the quintessence of SUV. And even though, no matter how dramatically different this one might be from all the old ones, you know, people are going to still think of this as the, you know, big old gas-guzzling, you know, rolling over, et cetera, vehicle, which it hasn't been for quite some time, and which is a dramatic departure. We're not really supposed to talk about it till Monday.
It is a dramatic departure and a very smart, contemporary-looking vehicle, too.
Yeah.
I could talk about it because I haven't seen it. but I think a lot of people have really good memories of Explorers. How many did they sell between 95 and 2005? I mean, a couple of million.
Zillions of them. Yeah. And apparently 140,000 Explorer people come back into the showroom every year. Now, they're not all, they have obviously not every one of them been buying an Explorer recently because they've been down in the 100,000 range or something, I think.
But it's one of the name plates in the U.S., and that's going to get Ford a lot of consideration.
And they said it's like 95% recognized as a Ford product.
96. I mean, 96% of people know the name Explorer. Recognition is 96%.
Which is amazing.
Amazing, yeah.
I mean, that's Mustang numbers.
Yeah. What they want is to get the people back who went and bought Pilots and Highlanders, you know. If now that their Pilot or Highlanders running out of, you know, warranty or whatever, and they're ready to go.
Do you think Ford is in danger at all of having, you know, the Explorer, the Flex, the Edge? Do you think there's anything? I don't. The reason I don't is the Explorer is such a, just what we said, such a recognizable and powerful name for them that.
It seems crowded to me. I mean, I don't personally see why you need all three of those. They will tell you that guys are coming down out of Expeditions into Flexes. You know, and the super high-end, the limited Explorer people that come back, some of them have bought those. But, I mean, it's pretty small numbers. I'm clearing room in the plant for Explorer. They're not going to. It's not going to cramp the Flex's style a lot, I don't think. But
does it create? Remember the rush to get out of minivans, the rush to get out of SUVs. Does this leave a big hole for something like the Jeep Grand Cherokee, which the new one is actually very nice? And as everybody's leaving it, is there still going to be a market of 500,000 SUVs that all of a sudden Jeep starts taking them all?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. The Jeep's a whole other story because now, I mean. We brought people down gently out of the live front axle some years ago. Now, all of a sudden, we don't even have a live rear axle. And, you know, what that does for articulation and so forth. And I wonder if some of the Jeep faithful are going to go, that's a Mercedes. I don't want that thing. I don't know. Maybe not, you know.
Well, I think the new Cherokee is a fine piece. I mean, it's not going to appease the hardcore Jeepsters, but it's a fine vehicle. I think the Explorer is going to be very good. I think Ford found out with the Flex that the people who have them are really strongly attached to them and talk positively to everyone they come across. But I think Ford's a little disappointed.
The same could have been said back in the day about the Aztec, you remember?
Yeah, exactly.
When someone signed on the dotted line, they loved it.
Yeah, I don't know about the Flex. I mean, I like driving them. I mean, for if you need room and that kind of set of needs, it's a great vehicle. I mean, I don't mind the way it looks either.
I think I love the way that it looks.
It's one where when I first saw it, I didn't, and it slowly grows on you. The more you see them, the more I like them. And but driving it, I love the illusion that it creates when you're inside of it. You think you're a lot higher up than you really are. You open the door and you go to step out, and it's the ground is right there.
Yeah.
It's inside is huge, and I can see why a lot of people, anybody that has it, is going to really like it.
Yeah.
Edge never did catch me. I don't know. They couldn't afford the high-strength steel they needed to make that thing weigh what it should have weighed in the first place, and so I always kind of thought, hey, it's kind of the weight of an SUV, but the capability of a crossover, so... you know,
have you seen the,
help me out here, you know.
The 2011 tweaks to it?
Yeah, no, I think the styling has really been improved, but I don't think they retrofitted it with high-strength steel. You look at a CX-9, which weighs the same or less, I think it's maybe a little bit more or something like that, but it's three-row, it's bigger, and because that's got the high-strength steel in it. So
the three-row thing drives me crazy, though. I mean, all these manufacturers... You know, they're afraid not to have it because, you know, someone will say, well, you don't have three rows, even though if you seriously use three rows, the people in the third row are, you know, are either dead or soon to be if they get rear-ended or claustrophobic, death by claustrophobia. I just, this obsession with three rows drives me crazy, but I know it comes in handy like once a year.
Yeah.
So you're going to compromise the whole vehicle?
No, the whole thing is if you've got two kids and they're involved in a sporting event, you know, and you have to carpool to the games and junk. You get a couple of, you know, you use it for those kind of deals.
I get that, you know. But trying to pretend that adults can be put back there.
Well, no, nobody puts adults back there, yeah.
Well, I just got out of a CRZ, and I have the same question on, do you really need a second row in a
second
car?
Row.
How often do you put anybody in your second row? If you don't have kids, you use it for commuting, you use a car for all these different things, do you even need a second row? And, I mean, I know that Americans tend to overbuy. We did it with the trucks and the SUVs, and they kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, maybe people will start weighing some of those things going, you know, you could still have the Expedition at home for the weekends to tow your boat and your trailer and take the entire soccer team somewhere, but maybe you should drive a little too soon.
How'd you like this CRZ?
I actually liked it more than I thought I was going to.
I remember I read your review, and you did like it more than you thought.
I never thought of it as a hybrid. I don't know price wise if it's gonna do well or I think a lot of people won't buy it just because there isn't a second row. I think that they'll just it's instantly off of consideration.
Well, and the thing is, the trouble is, the fanboys are all looking for a CRX here, right? And
it's not that
the performance people are gonna be sorry that it doesn't get the performance. The fuel economy people who remember the HF or whatever are gonna be disappointed that this hybrid version can't even achieve the fuel economy that the old, 10-year-old, whatever, how many years old, CRX made.
So a Mini beats it. A Cruise will beat it. And those all have second rows.
Right.
And so,
well, that's a good. I'm glad you brought up Honda because I love the concept. Disappointed in the execution of the front end of it. Disappointed. I've been disappointed in Honda. I think they've lost their mojo. And from what we're hearing, the pronouncements they're making from management, it's like, Honda was always the Honda Motor Company for a reason. They were founded by a racer. All the stuff they built had really appealed to me, appealed to enthusiasts. And they just seem to have lost their mojo, and they're kind of flailing around. Now, this week they're going green. They're going to have a plug-in. They're going to have a full electric. But I wish that CRZ would have been more of an enthusiast car, a little more power, and have the hybrid assist. But you're absolutely right. I mean, when we had $4 a gallon, people were starting to make smarter choices.
Right.
Yeah, you can have a big vehicle in the garage. No one's going to begrudge you for having more than one vehicle. It's not going to be that. But you're going to have a big vehicle for when you need it. But for around town, you can have a CRZ. And that's what everyone's hoping with the electric movement, that everyone just buys the electric vehicles for around town. But, I've got misgivings about that. That's a whole nother thing. But Honda, I think, really needs to somehow rediscover.
And their design just needs a lot of work. That CRZ and the Clarity are the bright spots in the last...
Yeah.
5 years or so.
The CRZ concept and the production. Yeah. Clarity, I really like.
Yeah.
But when you start totaling up Honda and Acura, boy, they need something bad. They need to go out and hire some top-notch design talent because they, left to their own devices, they're not doing so good.
That puts all the more pressure next year when the Civic comes out. There's a lot of feeling that Civic really needs, this Civic that's out right now really wowed people when it came out.
Didn't we hear they delayed it a little bit?
Maybe. I thought it was still 2012 model year, though. I'm not sure when.
But I heard the sign-off was delayed because they all of a sudden said, is this what we want to be doing here?
Yeah.
But, it's going to – that'll really give us a good indicator. I mean, that's an important vehicle because I don't think the
That's their whole company right there.
The Accord didn't wow anybody when it came out.
No.
Made some of us reach for the barf bags. I just hate the way that looks.
They've been showing the concept CRZ on the air or on the internet. That's cool.
And of course, Honda sold their 10 millionth Marysville car, I think, this week.
Yeah.
What was it?
I don't remember. A Civic or an Accord or
something.
One of those.
Well, have you looked at the sales? Accord and Camry numbers are just through the roof right now. 27,000 for the month. And people are buying them up, and neither one of those cars.
Well, I do know that.
Do much.
Yeah, I do know that Toyota and Honda have been just ladling on the incentives on those products. Just if you want an Accord or a Camry right now, they almost, pay you to drive it away, So. That has something to do with it. So what about the electrification thing? Where do you guys come out, Scott? Where do you come out on the electrification thing?
You have to pursue it. It's going to be almost as big as hybrids, which is not very big. There's lots of government incentives right now. And eventually we're going to have to move to that in that direction because eventually we will run out of fuel. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. I think that maybe a decade from now, you may see a lot of electric vehicles. But come on, a Fisker is still, what, $60,000, $70,000? Tesla is hoping to get a car in the $50,000 to $60,000 range. Those are not real car numbers. None of those cars are going to sell volume.
Yeah.
No, all the think tanks and so forth that I'm reading, they all say ain't going to happen. You can, it'll go as long as you want to pump the incentives into it, and maybe people go, hey, I'll get more of my tax dollars back, I might as well be the beneficiary of that. But the natural level of that thing ain't coming down. So I see, and of course, what we have to do to make 35 mile per gallon, that's another thing. But in just the natural state of things, I think we would probably get to a point where, you've got diesel for heavy loads. You've got just pure electric cars for running around short distances. Don't bother to carry along a big giant, IC engine and so forth. I think that's why Carlos Ghosn and these people think are bullish on Europe, because so many people there really do have a very small, radius they go in a day. And so for those folks, they have a little small diesel sedan to go on vacation with and a little electric to buzz around. And, that seems to make sense to me, I don't think the world is going to be all plug-ins anytime soon. And firstly, I don't think that we really have the rare earth metals to make the motors and, the lithium to make the batteries. I mean, I think all those things are going to be a problem if we did have some sort of, like 80% take rate or something like that.
Well, and right now, wait till an American has to pull off the highway after driving 100 miles, do a quick charge that takes 26 minutes or 30 minutes, then drive 80 miles and then do stop for another half hour. I mean,
it's never going to make sense for that duty cycle.
No. And, I piss people off this week with my column, but that's okay. I piss people off every week with my interview with Reddy Kilowatt. And, Reddy was kind of adding some levity to the discussion because even he didn't buy into it. But anyway.
What's Tesla stock at now?
Tesla, this whole thing about Tesla coming up with a mainstream car, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, guys, good luck with that. I mean, they're redefining the term smoke and mirrors, and it's just not going to happen.
Oh, it jumped. It's up to $21.
And
sell.
There's Reddy. There's Reddy Kilowatt right there. But, and the other thing is, I've joked about this. Just when India and China get into their muscle car phase, we'll be relegated to rickshaws over here, because, everyone wants to do the right thing. But didn't we just read this week that China's daily consumption of energy has exceeded the U.S.'s for the first time?
Yes. We're no longer the greediest of...
For the first time. But, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
And how many plants do they have in under construction right now?
Well, the dirtiest coal-fired plants in the world are there. And they're still online to build a whole bunch more. So, how do we resolve all this if they're, they're pretending they're going to clean their air up, and they're, I don't know how that's going to be unless they build like 50 nuclear plants in the next 10 years. I just, the hysteria for electrification is cool up to a point, and then it gets, someone needs to pull the plug on it, literally.
The thing I really do like about it is it does create a little bit of that wild, wild west atmosphere where we have all of these kind of different kind of approaches, and something that you hadn't seen in decades, where there's this innovation on powertrains, innovation on rethinking a lot of basic stuff. I mean, the whole reason the electric is so important is ultimately when fuel cells come in, because the drivetrain is still the same. It's just the power, but
he
I don't
said
know.
When.
Yeah, if. So it would be a better way, but.
Well, I agree. I mean, I like the innovation aspect. I love this new engine that Runkel and company is involved in. I think that's a hugely significant. And Bill Gates and that other high visibility investor just put $25 million in it.
Tesla, yeah.
And we had Runkel on the show, and I really believe that engine could be this huge transition plane. I mean, it could be the player in the transition to fuel cells, hybrids, electrics as a mainstream, but this engine is 50% more efficient, 50% smaller. I mean, everything about it is just really exciting to me. So that aspect of it's great. I just, when you get politicians in California and Washington getting too much involved in, automobile policy, it never goes well for the rest of us ever. So,
And they're always trying to do it with fuel economy legislation, which has been proven time, you know, abundantly proven doesn't work, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, CAFE is a joke. I mean, and the reason, all you have to do is go back 2 years ago when gas was $4 a gallon. Guess what? We blew past CAFE in like 90 days. Yeah. All of a sudden, people are dumping out of their Expeditions and Suburbans and scrambling around to get more appropriate vehicles for what they need. And gee whiz, our CAFE all of a sudden looked really good.
Yeah.
Now gas is, you know, it's not expensive.
But does that mean we should have a gas tax to artificially push the...
You know, if people really wanted to get people... If government really wanted people to make smarter choices, if gas was going to be $3.50 this summer, $4.25 next summer, $5 in the summer of...
I don't even say you have to go there. I say guarantee a floor for the price of oil. Because right now, and just set it at some place, and maybe you ratchet that up a little bit as it goes, just say, it'll never go down below here. Because then all these people that, you know, because there's all these great cellulosic ethanol technologies that no one will fund the plants for because no one wants to build something with assuming $50 oil and then suddenly it goes to 40 or 36 or whatever. If you said, hey, it's 60 here and it'll be 75, you know, there and it'll be 90 there, great. But, you know, if oil naturally goes above that, there's no tax, you know, it's not. But it would engender that kind of, you know, investment and so forth that I think we need.
I just think, you know, we've got a long way to go. The Cascada, the cellulosic thing, if they ever perfect turning our trash and waste into fuel, then we're, you know.
It's perfected. It's ready to go. They just need to build the plants, and the plants are expensive.
Yeah, and bring on the muscle cars at that point. I don't
imagine mining all of our, you know, Mount Brightons, you know, for old garbage, you know. I mean, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, it's almost science fiction. Like, take your trash bag and put it in your car the night before you go to work, and it's all good, you know.
I'm not sure it'll be micronized that much, but...
well, you know, it's a dream.
In fact, did Jetsons have a thing like that? I'm trying to remember.
Somebody did. But at the end of Back to the Future... The mad scientist guy lands and you know, Michael J. Fox and his girlfriend, no, it's your kids, and he puts garbage in his in his proton thing or whatever.
Flux capacitor.
Yeah, flux capacitor. So what have you driven lately, Scott, that you liked?
I just got out of the Jetta. I was in San Francisco for the 2011 Jetta.
What did you think of that? I mean, because here's a Volkswagen... clearly positioning this car downward price-wise so that they can build this vehicle in Tennessee that's going to be their real mainstream vehicle.
It's very nice. They kind of made it more sedate. They got rid of the shiny front end. They got rid of all that silver plastic that's on the current model and kind of leveled it out. I mean, it's... I think it's pretty well polished. I thought on the interior that there was a lot of carryover from the previous gen, the generation that's out now. You know, it has the new navigation system that was, you saw it in Tiguan and some of the other ones. And it's a little bit polished up, but it feels very similar to the, you don't feel like it's brand new. I drove the one with the 2.5. That's the engine in there, right?
Yeah. The one that's supposedly half a Lamborghini V10.
Well, it would be, what, not quite half.
No, it's the 2.5-liter five-cylinder. Yeah. I mean, that's the base engine, which I have never liked.
It's there's a smaller engine.
Oh, there's a two-liter also,
There's a two-liter. But the 2.5 is really nice. I mean, it's not bad at all. The one thing that was interesting is we were talking to him about... When you're pushing in on the accelerator, how there's that little bit of a gap before the car starts to, and it has to do with the clutching mechanism on the automatics that they stay open, and that's why you need to engage the accelerator, and then they close in and let you take off. And it's one of those things I've always noticed on Volkswagens, and it's kind of an annoying thing on a Volkswagen where you start to push down, and then it kicks in, and then you kind of lurch more forward. But... overall, the car rides really well. It's quieter. was one of the things that was noticeable.
Slightly bigger?
Yes.
Have you driven a cruise?
I've driven a couple of cruises on tracks.
What do you think between those two?
I think the cruise has more room. I think the back of the cruise is a lot roomier. But the cruise, the one I was most impressed with on the cruise was the Eco model. And it gets a lot better gas mileage. The Volkswagen is not really high numbers. Off the top of my head, I think it's around 34. And the cruise would be, Eco one would be another 6 miles per gallon. And they actually added stuff to the Eco instead of the, like the Eco versions of like the Blue Line stuff from Hyundai, which feel like a real stripped down version.
Right, right.
The cruise is not. It's supposed to be a mid trim level vehicle, and they have like the closing vents on the front, and I mean those are real things that's kind of neat technology. That's the kind of stuff I wouldn't be surprised to see on a lot of cars in the future, where there's adjustments to aero or cars lower themselves a little bit. You know, the new Jeep Grand Cherokee lowers itself on a highway with the air suspension to improve the gas mileage.
Right.
The interesting thing about that will be the Cruise Focus face-off, because I'll tell you what, Cruise is a fine car and everything about it, it's very conservative looking. Mm-hmm. The Focus is dramatic, compelling, more emotional. It'll be very interesting how those two
Most of the market is going to have Cruise covered on performance too. I think that you know, it's an admirable, you know, 1.4 turbo and so forth, but it ain't going to be very quick. It's not going to beat any of the Civics and Corollas and Jettas, I don't think.
So, Frank, what have you driven? Well, tell us about your trip a little bit.
I just had a chance to drive around Bavaria in the Audi RS5, which I even hate to even waste my breath on, because apparently they're not going to bring that car here. It's going on sale in Germany now, but it's coming in fall of 2012 as a 2013 model. But it's really nice. It's the same, the S5's same engine, but just, you know, dialed up to 11 with, you know, with everything, higher revving and, you know, forged and lightened, you know, all the rotating masses and lower friction and this, that, and the other. So it's 444 horsepower. But, really nice. And the greatest engine exhaust note, you know, intake and exhaust notes, super nice. So, and the whole thing is, you know, flared out, so wider tires, just a little more voluptuousness to the bodywork too. So yeah, very nice.
Was it, what color was it?
The blue. Mm. So yeah, very nice. 20s on it. Mm.
And there's some good roads over there too.
Oh gosh, yeah. And you know, the Autobahns, are able to.
Yeah, now there are more speed limits than the Autobahns, but the coolest thing about the Autobahn to me was that you're going along and you see the Dayglo yellow 911 flashing its lights in the back, and you know, you move over, and then you move back into the fast lane, and you see something else flashing, then you move over, and a 911 goes by, and inevitably tucked right behind the tail of the 911 is some crazed motorcycle guy drafting the 911.
I'll tell you, the trouble now, though, which is, I think, a fairly recent thing. You know, it used to be the lane discipline was amazing. No one sits over in the left lane. But there's people over there that are pissed that folks are wasting fuel that.
Yeah.
And so they'll wait till you're a certain distance away, and then they'll just decide to make a pass and pull out at, you know, 75 miles an hour, and you got to go, you know.
Yeah.
And it sure does burn it down when you're 70 to 150 over and over again, you know. I mean,
so they're wasting more fuel.
Of course they are. Yeah, you are not teaching me a lesson, okay? You're making me angry, but you're not going to change anything here.
That goes back, you know, everyone wondered why we'd get Porsches and some BMWs over here in bright colors, because the German transportation ministry did a study on color specifically for the Autobahn, just high visibility. And the brighter colors, obviously, they found it. That's why we went through a period in the U.S. when all our fire trucks stopped being red. And they found out that, because especially in the low visibility times with the fog over there so bad, that's why we saw the 911s and signal green and bright orange and day glow yellow. It was all because of that study. Well, they encourage it over there because you can go fast. Over here, we want black, dark blue. I mean, to not, you know, attract attention of the cops. But that's, you know, that's an interesting thing.
My other fun Autobahn story was I was on the Autobahn during the German elimination, you know, World Cup game.
Oh.
And so all the Autobahns that are always just crowded and you can't get any, you know, get anywhere. Ooh.
Wide open.
Yeah. Really close to Munich. You'd,
that's cool. I mean, when you get on and you go 150, 60 miles an hour for a while, it's amazing.
Yeah, and you're paying attention. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, I think their highways are less safe than ours. I'm driving along on a lot of Autobahns, and next to the,
There's a guardrail right there
so that you don't ever cross over, which is good. There's a granite curb that's like 2 inches tall. I'm like, my 20 series, my 30 series tires here, you know, are just going to be totally shot if I just momentary lapse. I'm thinking about something else and I drift over here. I'm going to be really sorry. So you don't. You
know? Well, that's when you get the 2 meter lanes too, with the concrete barrier on both sides, and you're like, oh, that's kind of close.
Yeah,
you focus.
Yeah.
And you know, well, that's been the argument. It's easy to say, well, if we had higher speed limits here, everyone would be better drivers. Yeah, not so much.
We need to get away from the fog a mirror, get a license program over here before we can, you know.
Yeah.
Well, Michigan has been noticeably one of the bad driving places. And my biggest pet peeve has been driving a straight line. I cannot believe how many people just drift over.
The whole distracted driving thing is an epidemic, I'll tell you. I mean, yeah, you see people drift over. I'll tell you, I used to ride bicycle a lot, and after having a few close calls and seeing the way people conduct themselves on the road, I mean, it's dangerous unless you just go to one of our state parks and take your bike and unload and ride there, because drivers just aren't paying attention. Now, you do that in the Autobahn, you're going to get hurt. I mean, so
yeah,
you get on there and you focus and you go fast and it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
But over here, wow.
Yeah, but, you know, I still say if you want to drive 100 miles at over 100 miles an hour, you can't really do it in Germany anywhere. There are places out west where you can.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, the U.S. is still a better place for going.
There are places in West Texas they don't even care. You could die and they wouldn't find you.
Yeah. You better hope OnStar's got a satellite link.
Yeah. That was always that in Casino. Remember the movie Casino, and they talk about the holes in the desert. Well, if you go to Las Vegas and you go to the Valley of Fire, and we used to shoot commercials there all the time, and we'd have, you know, part of the deal, you have to hire the cops, and you have to, it's all part of the package. And I was talking to this guy, and I said, hey, you know, in Casino, they said, you know, they bury people. He said, oh, yeah. So you bury out here, no one's going to find you. He said it still goes on all the time. And I was just like, oh, okay. Hey, Ben, what else was on my list that we so diligently put together? Do you remember?
EVs without subsidies.
No, we kind of covered that.
Yeah.
I think
you've covered everything.
Yeah, I don't think electric, without subsidies, it'd be real interesting what happened with the mass embracing of the electrification of the automobile. I would be very interested to see if the Volt costs what it really costs.
Yeah. And I'm dying to see if a Fisker ever materializes. I mean, what do you think? I mean, are we going to...
Should be rolling out any time now, shouldn't it? I mean...
You think?
Didn't they say the end of this year they were supposed
to... Yeah, well, they pushed back 2 dates.
The Horizon is always quite a ways out. Whenever you hear a Horizon,
well, that's like hydrogen fuel cells. It's always 20 years away.
Yeah,
I tried to jumpstart it, but just before the whole market crashed. So,
well, Volt is what, 3 months?
Well, yeah, I think they want to sell one before the end of the year, and they plan on. They're saying they're going to sell more than that, but it's going to be after the first year for real. When you're going to start seeing, although we've seen them around town all the time. I see them all the time.
Starting to see them in full color, too. There were those gray primer ones for a long time with the black bumpers, but, you know, I'm starting to see finished ones now.
I'm wondering if they went too conservative on the design, though. I mean, we're already tired of it because we see them around here and everything. I mean, out.
I have Volt press release fatigue big time too. I just delete them until it's like come drive the real thing. You know, I can't attend another battery, factory launch or another. But yeah, I'm eager to see the real thing.
I think it's conservative design again. I mean, just like the Cruze is on paper a fine car, and all the reports say it's a fine car. But then you go see the Focus, the sedan. It's just like
I'll tell you the other thing about the Volt. I'm really dying to study the David Kimball cutaway drawing of that thing. Yeah. Because there was another round of this rumor. Our British correspondent got a chance to drive one. Because I guess Opel and Vauxhall are vying, to get a factory to build those things over there. And so the British guys kind of jumped the gun and let a bunch of people drive the car to kind of get attention and help their cause. And they had some engineer over there who let it slip or didn't deny or whatever that it is indeed possible for the engine to turn the wheels. That it's possible but won't be enabled and... there's all this kind of thing, because it the motor touches a generator, but that generator was somehow connected to something too, and then of course everyone over here is pedaling as fast as they can, saying no, that's not true, that's wrong, whatever. But they were saying, for Autobahn high speed use, it might be too inefficient to, send the electrons through, and if there was a way to just hook directly up, and which makes sense, I'd be all for that. But they made such a big deal about that, the engine doesn't turn the wheels that.
Maybe they won't have a David Kimball illustration.
Maybe not, yeah.
For security reasons.
Or they won't have that engineer.
Yeah. Well, then I got to buy one and take it apart.
Well, come on. If you go flat out in a Volt, what's that going to get you to? You'll be all done in 30 miles, right, if you're flat out in the thing?
Well, that's the thing, is if there were a way for the, mechanism to directly drive the wheels, you could, So, I don't know if there's a speed above which the generator can't sustain enough energy to maintain that, and you just deplete the battery and so slow down to the speed that the thing can generate.
I think the electric motor has X top speed, whatever the motor's top speed is what you're going to be limited to. I drove one of the Thinks. I had it for 3 days. And its top speed is 63.4 miles an hour, which is you want to go about 65 when you're merging onto a highway. And you never knew that you wanted to go that fast until you're in that Think.
Until you can't.
And you're like, there's a problem here.
Yeah.
And, the other thing with electrics, I think, is really interesting is what is its real mileage? If it's raining and the thing has to go through more resistance, its mileage is less. If you're using headlights.
Air conditioning.
And the other thing that I don't think, unless I've just missed it, how is CAFE, what does Volt do for CAFE?
Well, that's,
How is it going to, what's the number? How's the number figured?
Remember, they said 230.
Well, that was a BS number.
They debunked that. And, and then I've heard that it's going to be somewhere around 100 miles per gallon. But
I don't think the government has said, all right, whenever SAE and you guys all figure out how you get the number that goes on the sticker, here's what we're going to do with it. Do we just multiply the calculated combined times the number of cars you built? I mean, maybe. I don't know. Because they were talking about that thing where you do the FTP cycle, repeat it over and over. You start with a full battery. You repeat it over and over and over until you achieve charge sustaining, to where the battery voltage before and after the test is the same. And then there's a way of calculating, and then there's all this monkey motion from there. And I think that's what they're going to do, to determine the number. Because then you figure out the number of miles that it goes before it hits that number, you know, there's a way to figure out what percentage of the population drives that many miles and so on and so forth. And then that's a, you know, correcting factor and whatever. But I don't think that's even been nailed down. Can you imagine going to market with a car that you don't know how it's going to affect your cafe bottom line and it's just months away?
I mean, for most people, mileage is how often do I fill up the tank?
Yeah.
You know, how far did I drive before I had to put more gas in it?
Right, and that's just not going to be the case with plug-ins, because the folks that are going to buy them are the people that have short commutes, and a lot of those folks are not going to put gas in it, you know, except quarterly or if they go on a vacation, you know.
And they're going to have to put something in the fuel tank to, because if that fuel just sits there for...
Although, I store my cars for long times without stable. You wouldn't want to go a year or two, but I bet you if...
Well, you just know that there's some... green evangelists out there who will try to say, well, I've never bought gas for my bike.
I removed the coil wire on mine.
Somebody buys a Leaf, he'll never buy gas.
Yeah.
So how do you do the mileage on the Leaf?
Yeah.
Well, and it's trivially easy to do gasoline equivalent gallons from the, if you've plugged for the whole thing. You just figure that out, you know.
Right.
It's just the, you know, this thing where, well, the gasoline actually created some of the, you know, electrons, and some of them were plugged in, and, you know.
And then where did you get the power when you did plug in?
Yeah.
That's your basic nightmare. I wish them all the best. I want everybody to be successful. But please don't ever think this electrification is going to sweep the nation, because it's going to be confined to urban centers. You get outside of the urban centers and you got to think twice about going to grandma's. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Well, car people are never going to be happy until it's all diesel wagons with manual transmissions. Eventually we'll convince everyone that's what they should be driving.
Well, I was just telling Frank, I had a TDI, a Golf TDI with the dual clutch transmission, and that thing was so impressive. It's just, I couldn't say enough about it. So, okay. What else can we talk about?
How about Ford dropping its hybrid markup?
Oh, that's significant, I think.
On Lincoln?
On the Lincoln.
On the Lincoln.
Because now you're a 3.5 V6 versus this setup.
But you tell people they don't have to pay extra for a hybrid.
No, that's great.
That's a very interesting
marketing concept. Yeah.
I mean, what if you didn't, what if all of a sudden there wasn't a financial penalty to do that?
Yeah.
That could be interesting. Could sell more of them, you know. Because then they don't get into, well, if gas is $3.50 a gallon, then it'll take this long for me. But if it's $4.50, wow, it's great. But if it's $2 and I'm paying $1,800, $2,000 more, and
yeah,
you know, but all of a sudden they just have eliminated that. They just, now it's the same.
Yeah. Which is, you know, I mean, Mercedes also charges way less as a premium for their diesel than what it really costs, and I think there's some packaging in there and so forth when you get that car. But
now, did we ever hear what the final decision? Remember, Mercedes management was about to rule that they were going to make all the new next-generation S-Class hybrids?
Oh, I don't know.
That was on the table about 3 months ago.
Well, are we talking the hybrid with the little tiny lithium-ion battery the size of a regular? So that's a mild...
No, this is a. These aren't mild. These are real.
The S400 hybrid...
Yeah.
I mean, it is a hybrid, but the battery's this big. It fits, you know, right ahead of the windshield. And, it's easier to push the button and say, we're going to do that.
Yeah.
You're not going to. People want S63s and S65s.
Yeah, but the U.S. dealers were just saying, you got to be kidding. You know, you can't just make them all hybrids. And so that was one of these. Huh. Ben, it's time for rapid fire. Pull that thing. Ben, are these first two phone ones? Yeah, let's run those.
This is Jim Little, Whitmore Lake, Michigan. I attended a tractor stationary engine show in Monroe about 20 years ago.
Your question.
And I've seen on display a stationary engine, which is similar operating principle to this Echo motor. And I'm imagining that this stationary engine was developed probably back in the 30s or 40s. And I've seen it operating at least 20 years ago. It might have been 25 years ago. So, yeah. Someone did invent this thing before. I wish I had the name of a manufacturer, but I don't.
You're sure it was four pistons and two cylinders?
This is taped. No, it's not the APOC.
It can't have been.
No, it's not the APOC. Let's one run more, and then I'll start reading these, Ben.
Hi, this is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. My question this week is for Peter. Peter, I was just wondering if you have ordered a Cadillac CTS-V coupe already, or if you're going to. Take care. Bye.
Love the car. Love to order one. Haven't ordered one yet, but I think they look fabulous on the road. You start to see them around here.
They drive really, really well. The transmission, that car with a twin clutch,
yeah,
be awesome. Without it,
The domestic's got to get on the stick with these double clutch.
Well, my other thing is with the automatic, which most people are going to buy, they've forgotten how to do performance algorithm shift. They invented it at Cadillac, and that car has no intelligence in the shifting. There's a sport mode, but it does nothing. It upshifts when you're going into a turn. But
it looks good.
It sure does.
Does look nice.
When, if ever, will you do a show about the various magazines? We've threatened that from the beginning, but we don't know when we're going to do that.
They should do one on Motor Trend right now.
Well, it's the best one, obviously. Any disagreements? Anyone? Anyone?
Comment from Ford Guy. Does GM really need a financial company to make money? Yeah, I know they make interest on the finance to the dealers and the customers. What happened to GMAC? Answer is yes, they do. I'm going to keep doing this, so. We already said, what did Scott Burgess think of the new Jetta? We covered that. Scotty in Cleveland, just wondering, when it comes to new Chrysler designs coming out, when will they run out of Daimler designs? I thought the last one was the Journey.
I'm not sure any of those were Daimler designs, because the ones that I've seen look dynamite. The 300 replacement and the Charger replacement look spectacular, and those are, you know, Ralph Gill designs, I think. There's nothing German about them.
There's German floor pans, I think.
Right, yeah, and axles and crap, but who cares? But yeah.
They desperately need something out besides a Grand Cherokee and in a hurry. Yeah. That's all they got.
I know.
And I was reading where they're going to do a third shift. That's still not enough, you know. Oh, this is for you, Frank, from one of our favorite guys, George from Brooklyn. Did Frank enjoy any good beers in Germany?
Oh, my God. Every beer in Germany is good. And I tried to, I was assiduously avoided. I don't think I had a cocktail. I had one martini once. No, the whole rest of the time, all beer, all the time. It's, what is it, four ingredients over there, or five is all they're allowed, and it's spectacular. It doesn't travel well, but.
Here's a comment from Dr. Botox. I don't know if you've guys seen this commercial. Peter, have you seen the Chrysler Tent Event commercial with the minister at the wedding? It made me throw up a little. Why does Chrysler advertising make it so difficult to desire their vehicles? Are you familiar with this?
No.
What is that one?
It's their sale commercial, but it's at an outdoor wedding, and all of a sudden the minister presiding over the wedding just goes into this trance and turns into a preacher and talks about Chrysler's on. So it's probably one of the worst commercials I've seen in a long time.
Gee whiz.
We're not going to spend any more on it. But what does the panel think of the upcoming Ford Explorer? We talked about that.
We think you should tune in on Monday to hear what we really think.
Yeah, I mean, stay tuned on Monday, folks, because the Explorer will be all over.
It will explode.
From midnight on, it'll be all over. Phil in Burlington, with Chrysler expected to turn a profit two quarters in a row, despite not having any new product, is it fair but sad to say that most North Americans really don't care how fresh the product is? I don't know. I mean, the profits they're turning now is from Fiat, basically. Trucks and tractors. So it's too early to tell.
Yeah.
Okay. This is comment about the Edge. We talked about the Edge.
I do like those Jeep ads. I wanted to, like, enlist in the military after watching
it. Yeah. Terry Barrett asks, with increased fuel economy as a main focus for car companies these days, you'd think that weight savings would be a logical place to start. Understanding that safety requirements has driven some weight up over the past few years, why are we seeing so many new cars with four-cylinder engines come out with dual exhaust? This seems counterintuitive.
There's nothing. Dual exhaust reduces back pressure and improves efficiency. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Never mind. Pedro Fernandez wanted to ask us about Honda, but we pretty much covered it. Peter, I find the new Grand Cherokee ad titled "The Things We Make Us" aspirational in a Jeep kind of way, patriotic without being jingoistic. Looking forward, based on the past. What says you, Dan? I like them. You like them. They're good. The print ads don't work as well because they start throwing too many words in, and it doesn't work as well. It works better on TV. Dan Hudgens asks, given the coming problems with the UAW, why don't the Detroit 3 open plants in non-union areas such as the South? Boeing, who is unionized, is opening a second plant to build their new 787 in South Carolina because of the work stoppages they've endured in their home base.
Is it that simple? Can they?
I don't know if it's that simple, but
quite that simple.
But as I've gone on record that Bob King is going to be a very difficult. This is going to be a difficult period for them.
Well, if they're starting to show profits, where's my cut?
Exactly. Okay. Okay, let's run the phone in from Youngblood in Cleveland about the green movement.
Hi, this is Lake Michigan Bridge in Wisconsin. I was wondering when we're going to get two doors back in the mix of new cars. I'm noticing a price premium on them in the used market.
I forgot.
And I'm imagining, is there a disconnect in used demand versus new demand? Thank you.
The used demand is from the shortage of used cars because people weren't buying new cars or hanging on to their old ones. And I think I've read where the average transaction prices has been highest.
It's a great time to buy a new car right now.
Yeah.
Because the used market is, everybody's looking to that first.
So, Ben, are we going to do this Youngblood in Cleveland one?
Hey, Peter, you look good in the captain's chair. I know McElroy likes Sam Adams. What do you drink? I got a question or a comment. These auto manufacturers, they can be politically correct as much as they want with this green movement, but they're going to be bankrupt. This is bull crap. Without the incentives, it's garbage. Do they have their eyes closed? Don't they realize that the technology might be there, but the storage facilities aren't there yet? I don't understand it. It's like going full speed over a hill. And another thing is last week they had that guy, Eco Motors, with the OPOC engine. There's the future. Why doesn't somebody have the cajones to make a one-off vehicle with that OPOC motor in it and show everybody that, hey, the future's here. It's being made, and we can keep it in America and make Americans work and make jobs. You know, I don't get it.
Well,
this is Youngblood, Cleveland, Ohio. Have a good evening. Back to the Sam Adams.
Thanks. Make no mistake, the manufacturers have no illusions about what they're doing. They have to invest in new technology. They can't be left at the gate. Where the electrification shakes out, it doesn't matter. They have to be there. And, I happen to agree with them. I think that OPOC engine, unless proven otherwise, could be significant.
But the world has to understand, people hear about it, they read a bunch of press, and they go, see, why don't those idiots just build it? You can't, it's not quite, it's a lot of testing and so forth.
Yeah, they're on their sixth generation, and they still needed money, $25 million from Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Sixth generation.
Yeah.
And
the split cycle guys are pedaling just as hard. That's a kind of a wacky, different idea, too, but they've got some, thermodynamic efficiency stories to tell, too. So one of those might shake out, but it's going to take a while.
How many failures have there been when people are trying to reinvent?
Right.
Shit, countless millions from when you read stories about when the agency was formed. How many guys blew up their barns? And then their wife said, I think we're done with that, don't you? And he went back to, horseshoeing horses. I don't know. Juan Barnett, this is an interesting one. Guys, contemplating a move from Washington, D.C. to Warren for a new job. I'll be in Detroit next weekend. Any recommendations on areas to visit or things to do? Jesus. Yeah.
Are you into cars? There's a lot of car stuff to do around
here. There's a lot of car stuff.
Well, hey, Friday, go to the AutoZone Saturday morning. Cars and coffee up there.
And if you've never been to the Henry Ford, it's. I had the pleasure. We did a show there a few weeks ago, and boy, you forget how spectacular that is. There.
Yeah.
It's worth the trip.
Saturday, you could just go and sit along Woodward Avenue, which people are already doing.
Yeah, the cruise is, by the way, the cruise is going on right now.
It's still moving, though. You don't actually have to.
It's actually the best part. That's the dirty little secret about the Dream Cruise. The Dream Cruise happens from Memorial Day all the way through. It's just before the actual Dream Cruise, the cars move, and it's much better. So, all right. Joseph N. in Lodi, California. Fiat announced this week that Chrysler dealers will not automatically be eligible to sell Fiats. Okay, Fiat, Alfa Romeo, Maserati, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and now Ram. Will Fiat possibly have enough real models to support all those brands, or are they slowly repeating GM brand tweaking from the Roger Smith days? I've been a skeptic about this plan for a long time, and I remain a skeptic, so I don't know what you guys can add to that. But.
Well, the one disadvantage they have in the car lineups is they're all really small cars.
Yeah.
I think their biggest car is one of the Lancias, and it's almost a midsize.
Well, the Thesis is every bit of a full size, or, you know.
A full midsize.
CD, anyway, yeah.
It's clear that whatever they figure out they're going to do for their mainstream sedan in this country better be a grand slam home run.
And their Thesis is no good. They're going to replace it with the 300 replacement, I think.
Now, this guy is asking Peter Hofbauer, the inventor of the Apoch motor, who was on. One, can the engine run on natural gas? Two, does it scale down, and would it have any utility as a range extender?
It scales down to a briefcase size.
Yeah.
The Army was looking at it as a field power generator for small, radio operations and so forth. And I think it'll run on practically anything. It'll do two-stroke, diesel cycle, auto cycle.
Rumblestrip wants to know, should the U.S. change how it rates fuel mileage from MPG to gallons per 100 miles, similar to the Euro's liters per 100 kilometers? It would seem that...
I have been a big proponent of that all along. It's much more realistic, when you see the difference between, a 10% improvement in the amount of gas you use makes a less number difference the way we do it, than that way.
Now, here's more questions for Peter Hofbauer. He left. That train left. More questions on Apoch. Phil in Burlington. I assume that's Burlington, Vermont. Right. After hearing about the Woodward Avenue Dream Cruise for years now, I finally booked the time off and will be attending. Woohoo! Do you have any local insight as to where I could park my little trailer?
There are still spaces available in a number of places.
From Thursday to Saturday to watch the cars going up and down Woodward.
Yeah, I'd almost say you can't park it anywhere.
Unless you find a very understanding motel.
Yeah.
And it's a small trailer.
Yeah.
A pop-up that will go in your assigned parking space.
Yeah, and they'll probably only charge you the same price as a room.
Comment from Dr. Nick. What's the point of buying an EV when for similar money you can get a Volt or other range extended vehicle and have no range anxiety? Urban fleets like buses, parking enforcement, etc.
I don't think that's really the case. What EV are you going to buy that's the same price as a Volt?
Leaf. It's less. It's cheaper.
It's quite a bit cheaper. That's the thing. Yeah.
It gets incentive, or do they just...
It gets the full incentive. With incentive, it puts it down to like $26.
$7,500.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're not going to get a range extender for the same price.
Jim Campbell from Calgary, Canada asks, I would like to ask why, for the most part, you guys dislike the GM emblem. Personally, I think it should also include the Mark of Excellence.
The GM emblem?
Having it on all the cars?
I think he meant, which is...
Oh, when they got rid of it?
It's not the case anymore. I just think it was unnecessary, so...
The Intel Inside idea, right?
Yeah.
I didn't care either way.
George from Brooklyn, why hasn't GM updated the Impala after so many years? Okay, I've been vilified by a certain site out there that I am totally full of shit about what John Cafaro is working on at General Motors, and now it's come back out that all of a sudden, oh, the Aussie rear-wheel drive drivetrains are not going to be one car. There might be as many as three. So let me just say again that John Cafaro is working on a kick-ass drop-dead something for Chevrolet with rear-wheel drive and a V8. Now, what that is called remains to be seen, but I just thought I'd throw that out there.
The Impala?
Yeah. Well, there's... Yeah. This might be called something else. What about the ongoing poor sales of the Hyundai Genesis? This is from Roger Will. I don't know what to make of that. Not everything Hyundai does turns to gold.
Right.
You know, they put all their marketing money behind the Sonata.
Yeah.
Gee, what happens? Then everything else falls off the table. I mean, you know.
Yeah, because they're really pretty good cars. It's just no one in those segments has been thinking about Hyundais, so they got some uphill, you know.
Now, this is an inflammatory question. Comment from Unsprung. What does the panel own and drive and not your test cars? That's a whole nother show. We'll go on.
It's not modern. I have no modern car.
Yeah.
Frank. I do. I'll say this. I bought a pickup when gas was $4 a gallon.
Got a good deal on it, didn't you?
A great deal.
You know, I think every household should have a pickup.
Not me. I'm against that. Ever since Home Depot will rent you one for, you know, $19.99 for 75 minutes, how many minutes do I need a pickup for? I'll buy them that way.
Well, you how know much? What? I hate to say it, but my our crack guys here, Craig and Ben, have informed us that we are done. We are out of time.
We didn't know because the little spinning thing didn't tell us.
I feel the ghost of Chip with his finger tapping my shoulder. So anyway, thanks to all, you know, thanks for everyone for tuning in. I don't know who will be there here next week, but I assume we'll all be back as the original cast. You can follow Frank's work at motortrend.com and at twitter.com/MT_Marcus.
You're late in the
You won't find much there.
Yeah, you won't find much there. You can read Scott's stuff at debtnews.com. That's Detroit News, debtnews.com, and at twitter.com/autocritic.
It was available.
Who knew? And there you are.
I'm not a tweeter.
It's difficult.
I do it occasionally to announce that a new issue's out, and then but all the tweet people say, "Oh, you don't do it right."
Yeah, I know.
So I crawl back in my cave and don't do it anymore. And you can visit autoextremist.com or follow me on Twitter, but you'll never see me there at autoextremist. you can follow Autoline on Twitter at twitter.com/Autoline, and, you know, there is activity there. Don't forget, you can also friend us on Facebook to get all kinds of content throughout the week. You can find our page at facebook.com/AutolineDetroit. So thanks again to everyone, and we'll see you next week for another slam-bam edition of Autoline After Hours.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at AutolineDetroit.tv.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.